Welcome to the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold. Hope you're having a great day here on June the 7th. We'll be taking your calls in just a bit. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. I think what I want to talk about today is I want to talk about investments and investing in personal finance. Every so often I do one of these shows where I talk about these issues, and I think I want to talk about it today because I'm a little bit worried about people. I'm a little bit worried that people are in that mode again where they are reacting to the 24/7 news cycle about the events in the world, and they're taking actions in their investment portfolios. Not everybody. But they're wondering about, should they take action? Should we bug out and get the hell out of here and go stick our savings under a mattress and buy a fort and put, armed gunmen around it and cans of food in? And I understand that impulse. I do. I get it. And I read all kinds of opinions, and including there's a blog site I like called Zero Hedge, which really is the best of the doomsaying financial, because this is a group of experienced finance people, and they've got their perspective that's steeped in the profession and steeped in really deep understanding of financial markets and finance. Doyle's telling me he's got a perfect song for this subject. Okay, he's going to get it. So I want to talk about personal finance today because it's what I do on an everyday basis, and I've just been getting calls from clients and, frankly, listeners and emails. I'm rich. I want to sell everything I've got. I want to sell all my investments. I want to own cash. So I want to talk about where we are, where I think we are. And, of course, as always, saying that neither I nor KPFT gives financial advice. This is not to be taken as any actionable advice. This is for informational purposes only. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities. Of course, any investment results of anything will invariably differ from any model, any projections. So there is the disclaimer. You understand it, and it is enforced for the remainder of the show. Having said that, what I want everybody to do is to think back to 1998, into the year 2000, into the early part of 2000, before March of 2000. And you probably, if you were like most people, were really, really interested in the stock market at that time, because so many people were, and of course the media, except for this media, which this media, this station, always tries to play it straight, but other media, and there is a segment of the financial media that's really could be considered to be pornographic. It's money pornography. It doesn't mean that those sources of information are totally devoid of value. Maybe Forbes or Business Week or even CNBC. Those things are not devoid of value, but the presentation is such that it verges into the prurient, into the pornographic, and can have an adverse effect on anybody who is trying to think about their long-term retirement, their long-term financial plans, their financial goals. Those things often can knock you off course and can sidetrack you from the main track. The main track being that people need to get put together that are designed to accomplish long-term goals. And so much, of course, of our financial media, which verges on pornography, money pornography, is designed to get you off the main track and put you on the sidetrack. So again, let me see if I can give you some perspective. If we go back to 1999, and I want to talk about the concept of yield. Everybody knows what yield is. Yield is what an investment pays, right? What's the interest rate? It pays. And some investments pay yield, and it's called something different. For example, in real estate, if you own real estate and you have a tenant, right, what is the yield called, Doyle?
Rent.
Rent.
Deposit.
Rent. It's rental income, right? So if you own real estate and you have money coming in from that, you put $1 million down to buy an apartment building or a house and you lease it out, you have rent coming in. And the yield on that investment is whatever the rent is divided by the value of the investment, right? So if you buy a $100,000 apartment and you lease it out for $10,000, what's the rental yield, Doyle?
$120,000 a year. You said $10,000? Oh, $10,000 a year.
$10,000 and you bought the apartment for $100,000, you're renting it for $10,000, what's the rental yield?
10 years? I'm not sure.
I want a percent. It's 10%, right?
10%. 10%. Okay, sure. It takes 10 years to get your money back, basically.
That's the idea.
Right.
Let's leave aside the issue of taxes and transaction costs. Let's keep it simple. Now, by the same token, I could buy a bond. I could buy a bond for $100,000. And if the bond pays me $10,000 a year in interest on the bond, what's the yield on the bond? He's thinking.
Dun, dun, dun.
He's thinking. What is it? Come on, Doyle. It's the same. 10%.
10%.
Right? All we've done is change the investment and what we call it. One is called rent. The other is called interest. Right? In the first, we own a building. It pays $10,000 in rent. In the second, we own a bond. It pays $10,000 in interest. We don't care. You know, we put the same money down and we're getting paid the same amount. The only difference is you know, what's the collateral, what's the value of the, or rather, what's the asset itself, and what do we call the return? One is rent, the other is yield. Now, what if we own a business that we buy for $100,000, okay, and it pays us what of $10,000? What do we call it?
A yield?
We call it income, earnings, right?
Okay.
That's $10,000 of earnings. So, listeners, it's all the same. Whether you're investing in real estate or bonds or you're investing in stocks, or which are businesses, right? That's what a stock is. It's an ownership interest in a business. All of these things are forms of yield, forms of return. In the case of real estate, again, rent. In the case of a bond, it's interest. And in the case of a business, it's earnings. You got it? So if we go back to 1999, and if we go back to December of 1999, everybody was going nuts about stocks. We'd gone through Netscape and the internet IPOs. Remember, people were buying IPOs, and we talked about Facebook a few weeks ago. Everybody was buying IPOs at the time. They were buying businesses that were coming public that had not only not earning, sometimes they didn't even have any revenue. Right? It was that. And people were gaga about stocks, and the financial media was goosing that with its pornographic descriptions of get rich now and what was the earnings yield on stocks in general, and I'm talking about big companies that had earnings. Well, the yield at that time was 2%. 2%. Is that a big number, Doyle? 2%. If I said to you, I want you to buy stocks, I want you to buy a bunch of stocks and buy interest in business, Is 2% a good enough yield to compensate you for the risk that you're taking in owning a business? 2%.
Maybe not in owning a business, but sitting on a stock might be okay.
Well, I mean, maybe owning a CD in a bank, 2% might be good, but yeah. But you know, that's guaranteed. But I mean, owning a business, there's lots of risk, right? There's business cycles, as we're in right now, right? We're in the downside of a business cycle. So 2%, not a great yield on stocks back in December of 1999. In fact, in some ways, an all-time low at that time, and yet people couldn't get enough of that stuff. Now, at the same time in December of 1999, what was the yield on the U.S. 10-year Treasury bond? Everybody out there thinking? Do you remember anybody out there? Do we take calls on it or nah? Probably not. But I just want the noggins to think a little more out there. What was the yield on the 10-year Treasury bond in December of 1999 when stocks at that time had a yield, and that was stock? The answer is 6.5%. U.S. Treasuries in December of 1999 had a yield of 6.5%. Stocks had a yield of 2%. But was anybody interested in U.S. Treasury bonds in 1999 December at 6.5%? Right? You remember. Bonds, they're boring. Who cares?
It's all about what it's exciting. I can go buy
the internet stuff. Okay, and what happened? What happened in the following 10 years or so after those were the prevailing conditions of December of 1999? Well, would you say people are too happy about how their stock portfolios have done over the last decade? How about how their bond portfolios have done over the last decade? Yeah, most people are pretty satisfied. And so what have the returns actually turned out to be over the following 10 years from December of 1999 that I'm describing to you? What did the actual annual return turn out to be for stocks and bonds over the following 10 years? What was the average annual return you got? What do you think, Doyle? What is your guess? What do you think stocks returned over the following 10 years, more or less?
2%.
Good guess. Because that's exactly what stocks returned basically over the following 10 years. In other words, the yield that was on stocks and visible to everybody in December of 1999 is what the actual annual yield, when all was said and done and the smoke cleared after 10 years of performance in the stock market, was about 2%. And what, Doyle, do you think was the return on bonds over the following 10 years, subsequent to the December of 1999, 6.5% visible yield on 10-year Treasury bonds at that time?
I'm going to guess somewhere in the 6.5%.
Yeah. Hey, you were good at this game.
Oh, yeah.
Give yourself a prize. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, bonds have turned... The following 10 years, I don't know, call it 6% or 5, 6%. Okay, everybody got it? That's what happened. Because that's where prices were back in December of 1999. Now, fast forward to today. And what is everybody's opinion about owning stocks these days versus owning by own? What we've seen in the last year is that people have been selling more, let's say, because not everybody's been selling, but there have been lots of people deciding to sell their interest in businesses in public stocks and buy bonds. We've seen a net outflow out of stock funds and into bond funds. Okay? And when you add the poor 2% performance that stocks have had and has disheartened everybody over the last 10 years with the problems in Europe, further exacerbating pressure on stocks and further causing people to love 10-year treasury stand. Well, we now have a yield on the 10-year treasury bond that is about 1.5%. 1.5%, that is, I believe, an all-time low. You know, going back, way back, into the 30s and 40s and 50s, we have the 10-year treasury bond at 1.5%. If you were listening to Democracy Now! Yesterday, you heard Joe Stiglitz talking about the fact that it's crazy that the United States is not borrowing a ton of money right now to do critical projects like fixing infrastructure. Because at a 1.5% treasury rate, it's almost free money for the country to borrow. We barely have to pay any interest, and we can borrow as a nation money for 10 years at 1.5% interest. I would take that deal. Wouldn't you take that deal if somebody came to you and said, I'd like to loan you money?
Yeah, you know somebody?
Do I know somebody?
Yeah, I'll take a
bunch. I know people. You know people? Anyway. Yeah, you know, that's a pretty good deal. They were kind of given that deal at in 2008, right, 2009, when we had the financial crisis and you went in to buy a car. Remember all the car deals? Remember 0% interest payments for 5 years and stuff? Well, that's kind of where we are. And the U.S. government can now borrow for 10 years at 1.5%. Now, I know what you're thinking, dear listener. All right, Leo, what's the yield on stocks right now? Well, stocks have a yield of around, let's call it 8%. 8%. Some categories of stocks are different. You know, smaller companies may have a different yield than bigger companies. Foreign companies and European companies may have an even bigger yield than American companies. Why would they have a bigger yield? And in fact, they do. Right now, European companies have a yield of maybe 10 or 11%. Why? Why is the yield on European stocks, that is to say European companies, which includes European banks, higher than it would be on their American counterparts? The answer is obvious. It's why the interest on a riskier bond is higher than the interest on a less risky bond. It's why the interest on a single A bond is higher than the interest on a triple A bond. It's why people with lower credit quality pay a higher interest rate than people with better credit quality. This is the way financial markets price risk. And if you are a greater risk, you have to pay a higher interest rate. And right now, European companies have a yield of about 10 to 11%. And a lot of these companies you know. All of you KPFT listeners, for example, who buy Gucci. Gucci does not have a 10 or 11% yield, but it's part of a collection of European stocks that in the aggregate has a higher yield than American companies. So what does that mean as we compare December of 1999 with June 7th of 2012? We basically have a 180-degree opposite image in the mirror. In December of 1999, stocks, which are riskier than bonds, and should have been yielding more than bonds because they're riskier, actually were yielding 4.5% less than the safest bond in the world, the United States 10-year Treasury bond. And when I say the safest bond in the world, I mean given other bonds of similar duration, right? Because a 3-month bond is going to be safer in many ways than a 10-year bond, right? Because someone's got to pay you back in 3 months, so the money's closer. But all other characteristics held the same. The 10-year Treasury bond yielded 4.5% more in 1999. And what ensued in the next 10 years was predictable to everyone, but only predicted by a few, only acted on by a few, because a lot of people got hurt. And here we are, years and years later, and we have almost a 180-degree opposite situation. Bonds now yield, the 10-year Treasury now yields 1.5%, and people can't get enough of it. Just like they couldn't get enough of stocks at 2% in 1999. We're at 1.5%, and in the past few weeks, people can't get enough. They're freaking out over Europe. They're freaking out over Greece. They're freaking out, and they're like, get me out of stocks. I've had people call me and say, I want to go to cash. I've had listeners send me emails to New Capital shows saying, what do I do? I want less volatility. I understand that sentiment when markets are volatile and people's accounts go down. But I just wanted to give you a description today so you understand where I see, how I see, where we have gone full circle. Now, imagine what my answer would be if I was to be asked, Leo, what do you think the yield on average will be in the 10-year Treasury bond over the next decade on an annual basis? What do you think my average annual return, my yield that I'll receive will be on the 10-year Treasury bond if I buy it today? What do you think my answer is going to be?
Probably like 6.5%.
Come on. Hey, Doyle. No. You've not been listening. It's the current yield on the bond. That would be my guess. I've got nothing better that I could guess. You could try to make a case to me that we're headed for deflation. You could tell me that we're going to be eating each other's flesh for dinner, and we're going back to cannibalism, and I'd say, okay, I understand it, but still my best understanding of what the yield right now is most likely to be is 1.5% a year. You may say, great, that's fine. I'm happy with that return, until I tell you that inflation is running at about 3%, and inflation has run at 3%. And what does inflation do? Inflation eats the value of your money. And if you're only earning 1.5% and inflation is running 3%, that means that you are getting 1.5% of the value of your purchasing power of your money destroyed annually. You may be okay with that. You may say, I would rather have that happen to me than own business interests through stocks. But if you ask me, what do I think the likely return on equities is, what's it likely to be? My best guess, my best estimate for the next decade, on average, annually, you know what I would say. I'd say it looks to me like it's going to be about 8%. And if you were to hold a diversified portfolio that included also some European stocks and some stocks in other countries that might have higher yields because they're not perceived to be as stable or safe as U.S. companies, and their yields are 10 or 11%, you can imagine that if you took all those companies and mixed them into a big mixing bowl, you might come up with a return of about 9%. So as I see it, there's your choice. Just like your choice in 1999, you could own stocks at 2% or treasury bonds at 6.5%. I would say take the treasury bonds. You know, by and large, that actually was a much easier decision than this one, because stocks should have a higher yield than bonds. But should stocks have that much higher of an implied yield than bonds? Now, I know there are other bonds. The U.S. Treasury bond's not the only other bond, and there are other bonds. So this is in some ways a simplistic example, but it's the best one that I know how to give so that you can better understand the environment that we are facing. Now, what is the price that you pay for saying, I'd like to get the 8% or the 9%? What is the price that you pay? The price that you pay is volatility. There's nothing for free, folks. Americans have wanted and other people want free lunches all the time. You don't get a free lunch. You don't just get to put your money into stocks and you get, bango, your 8% a year or your 9%. You have to endure volatility. That's the cost. You want to see the ride? You got to pay the ticket price. Isn't that the saying? You pays your price and you takes your ride, right? Something like that. Anyway, there's some saying like that. If you're not willing to pay the price in the form of volatility in the portfolio, and there are ways to damp down volatility, but if you're not willing to pay the price in the form of volatility, you should not think that you're entitled to the return. And you should not think that you are going to be able to wait out the volatility and wait out the Europeans to figure out what's going on and wait out other uncertainties until the smoke clears. And then you'll say, okay, the smoke has cleared. Now I'm ready to make my investment now that everything is clear and everybody's happy. Why? Why can you not do that? Because by the time that happens, what will prices have done? What will the market have done before you have decided that it's safe for you to come out of your foxhole? Prices will have risen. The return may already be there. Could be very substantial return. This is how it works. So, you have to decide. Every investor has to decide, you know, what's the return that I need? What kind of volatility in the short term am I willing to endure? What are my goals? What's the prevailing environment? And am I willing to pay the cost in the form of volatility in order to get the return? If you're not, don't expect to get the return. You're not entitled to it. You're not bringing anything to the party. So I'm worried about people. This is why I wanted to talk about this today. I'm worried that people are not making decisions based upon references to yield. They're not looking at where yields are. They're not looking at where we've come from. They're only reading every single news item out of Greece and making long-term investment decisions and portfolio adjustments based on that. And it's not that Greece is not important. I read the news too. Believe me. As an investment advisor, I got to read. I got to read, you know, as much as possible. Sometimes I'm reading at 3 a.m. and I'm reading stuff that's coming in and I've got sources that I like and I feel like there's a narrative that I can follow and make sense out of. Okay? But you also have to have the ability to place information and narrative into context to be an investor and to be a saver. And we're all investors. Don't think you're not an investor just because you don't invest. If you say, I'm all in cash, you are invested in cash. You are 100% invested in one kind of asset, cash. Is that very diversified? Does that sound diversified to you, 100% cash? How about 100% treasury bonds? Does that sound very diversified to you? So a decision not to invest is a decision to invest. We are all invested. All right. 713-526-5738. We're about halfway through the best hour of radio anywhere here on Thursday. 713-526-5738-526-KPFT. I need to take a break, Doyle. What do you think? You want to do some music? You want to do some traffic and some weather? What's your...
Yeah, let me do this, some traffic and weather real quick.
All right, give it to him.
All right. If you are headed out on the north... it's 45 North Freeway. Expect some delays. It's starting to build up there. I know it's only 4 o'clock, guys, but it's starting to get that way. 290s, a little slow as usual. There are a couple accidents to report on the 610 West Loop. So if you're in that Galleria area, watch out for that. There's also some construction at 610 North Loop westbound at West TC Jester. And if you're headed in, inbound on I-10 West, headed into downtown on, headed east, expect some delays inside the 610 Loop as well. 45 South is, really slow between the, Beltway and the Ship Channel. If you're headed southbound, watch out for that. And if you're headed northbound, it's even worse. Actually, it's 20 miles an hour in that area. Looks like we were supposed to get some rain yesterday, according to the weather reports a few days ago, but it looks like we're going to hold off on that. The temperatures are in the upper 90s, so please stay in the shade, keep yourself cool, and do what you need to stay hydrated. Back to you, Leo.
All right, 713-526-5738. The phones are wide open. I may have put everybody on ice with my discussion about yields. And if so, I'm sorry. That wasn't my intention. My intention was to try to give people some deeper thoughts about where things stand. So, if you've got some ideas, if you've got some thoughts, if you want to share your own opinions, if you want to share your own opinions about what your thoughts are about the world, about yields, about what you see coming up, feel free to do that. We can mix that into a discussion about yields and financial planning and so forth. If you want to talk about something else, if you want to mix in a discussion about Spain and Europe, and how this relates to investments and investment policy, I'm happy to do that as well. Really, it's your call, 713-526-5738. If I have stimulated any sort of thought, if you're wondering about how what I've discussed fits into your own personal investment objectives, that's fine. If you want to talk about how crazy scared you are and you don't know what to do, that call also, we can talk about that. I like to open the phones up because I like everybody to hear other people discussing how they're feeling. If you think I'm totally crazy and I don't see what is about to occur in the world, and I know there are those viewpoints, and I read them and I respect them, and you know, we are just about to enter the end days, and yields be damned. I'm happy to have that discussion. I'm really trying to offer this discussion about yields as a way to try to ground people's fears, hopes, dreams, family lives, portfolios in what I would call financial orthodoxy and the way that I, as a professional, have to think about the facts and the situations as they face me at any point in time. Okay, so I'm not trying to give any kind of dry description of what a yield is. I'm trying to do these other things. And look, here come the phones. So let's start it off with Tag on line one, our friend who we talk to regularly. Tag, welcome.
You know, I was just at the station,
yeah,
and started on my Dollar Day pledge. And, you know, when you talk about investing money and yields, you know, when I spend $100 like that, I kind of think, oh, what am I really getting out of this? And, you know, I just appreciate you guys are there and everybody to bring us these programs and information. So that made me feel good. I could put some money towards it, you know.
Well, again
that's completely whatever. You didn't ask for me to say that at all, I know. But
Wait, Tag. You put some money to KPFT or put some money toward any particular investments I've been talking about? That's
towards a radio station. You know?
Oh, great. Hey,
I mean,
listen. I've done my job then, really. Nothing could be better. And that is a form of investment. I want everybody to know you get a real return, as we know, from investing in KPFT because it allows me to come on the station and bring this kind of discussion to you. And You know, there are other financial shows. Mine's not purely a financial show by any means. In fact, it's more of an economic show. But I try to bring every so often an hour of discussion about personal finance that hopefully it gives more than any other show or station can give in every single day talking about it. You know, that's the goal here.
You know, Leo, I had one more comment about that. You'd like to hear it.
You bet, of course.
You know, I'm spending this money and I'm thinking, really, why do I feel good about doing this, you know?
Yep.
And like I said, it's really, you know, you hear during Pledge Drive, oh, do this. But once you get down and actually spend the money, it's really not, you know, it's really a good thing, you know, so it makes you feel good. So that's, I guess, what I really want to emphasize. So with that, I'll pass. We'll see you soon.
Great. Thanks, Tag. Great to have you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Always a pleasure to have Tag on the show and his considered comments and his support of the station. Next, let's take Ryan on line two. Ryan, welcome to the New Capital Show. How are you?
Very well, sir. Thank you. And thank you for being on the air. You're right about the best show on Thursday afternoon.
Oh, thank you.
I have an elderly family member who is about 25% in stocks,
yep.
And I'm tired of hearing them fuss.
Yep.
And I told them to go back into bonds. I was probably stupid, but I just have an intuition that they're going to get another chance at a March 2009 coming up pretty soon, and she can buy her stocks back out of the checking account then. What do you think about that?
Ryan, how old is elderly?
86.
And how's their health?
She's had an open heart surgery. She gets around. She's ambulatory.
And does she have plenty? Let's just say she put it all in cash. Could she get through even if it was just all in cash and not earning anything but losing, you know, a couple percent a year to inflation? Would she be fine?
I'm pretty sure she would be because she's about 25% of her investments and holdings in stock.
No, I know that. But if you took and put 100% of whatever she's got into cash and you run the cash flows on what it's going to take for her to support herself to the end of her life, how long is she going to live, do you think?
If she lived another 14 years, she's got the money to do it.
Even if it's all sitting in cash and inflation is there?
Yeah, I just...
See,
I'm
so...
I'm hearing her fuss about taking a loss.
Yeah.
I said, get out for a while.
Okay.
If you want to buy stock...
All right.
In 5 or 6 months, take the $50,000 that's in your checking account and buy stock when it's on its behind again, like it was in March 2009.
Right. Okay. Well, look, you have the luxury of doing that because, is this your mom?
Yes.
Okay. Your mom's time horizon is not as long as yours and mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her portfolio doesn't have to go as long. So because that's the case, she can take a lot less risk. And should take a lot less risk. So your mom's in a very different position than rank and file people who are retiring right now, who are in their 60s, and they got to go 3 decades, 2 to 3 decades.
Yes,
it's a different story. So your mom is literally in a different position. She could do that. You're telling me she could go ahead and sell her higher yielding investments in equities and hold cash, which earns almost nothing, and still be fine through the end of her life. So. You could consider doing that. I would probably, frankly, advise you, don't sell it all. Maybe take it to 10%. You know, there's a lot of spots in between 25% and zero. And the reason I'm advising you to do that is because financial orthodoxy and financial academic studies show that when you add equities to an all bond portfolio, you actually reduce risk. Okay.
Yes.
And when you hold an all, it's counterintuitive. But the reason for that is that stocks and bonds are not correlated. When one goes up, the other goes down. So
mm-hmm.
we could enter a period when bonds go down in value and stocks go up. And so I'm just suggesting, you know, you might say, okay, Mom, we'll go ahead. You show her that you're doing something. You reduce the stocks a little bit, but you don't go to zero. You know, zero,
okay.
There's a big difference between 25% and zero. You could go to 15%, you know, or 10%. And frankly, I think that's probably my recommendation.
I appreciate your advice, sir.
Ryan, great to have you. Thanks. 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. It's, you know, personal finance day here on New Capital Show. And next is Ian. Ian, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hello. Yeah, thank you. Do you think the corporate agents Namely, the Republicans got a good rate of return on their investment in the Scott Walker campaign.
Yeah, Ian, I mean, you know, this is what the Citizens United decision has opened up. And by the way, if you have not read, I think it's Jeffrey Toobin's article, who is one of the great legal writers in this country, who wrote about a month ago in The New Yorker the inside story of the Citizens United decision. And it is really a must read. I mean, if you want to read what happened all the players on the inside, how the decisions got made, it's an amazing, amazing article. And that is what the Citizens United decision.
Where do you find that?
In The New Yorker. You could probably go to newyorker.com and search on Citizens United, and it'll come up. Or you could Google New Yorker Citizens United, and it's going to come up. And what becomes clear from that article is just how is how activist the majority was, the conservative majority was in the Citizens United case. They took liberties to expand. Now, mistakes were made by the government's attorneys, but still they took liberties to make such a sweeping judgment that and this is the result of it. Enormous, enormous amounts of influence peddling money going into our elections. And I'm afraid to say, Ian, that it's just going to get worse until it gets better. And it's going to get better when this country finally stands up and says, this is terrible. We've turned ourselves into disgusting pigs with regard to our elections. And I want to tell you how sorry I am about it. I'm not saying anything about the decision or collective bargaining. I'm not saying anything. I'm not even getting into the details or what do I think of Scott Walker. I'm just saying, when the kind of money is influencing our elections the way that it is, it should give everybody a very, very distinct sense of unease and disquiet. And I'm sorry that it's here. You know,
if everybody. Yes, and if money is speech, then who has the most speech? The corporations that who hold the money, you know, and so that we the people don't have a voice. I mean, we're drowned out. I think it was at 7-1 the investment from the corporations into the Republican pockets was. And the another interesting, explain this to me. How they have they can take corporate money, put it into a super PAC or into some kind of 401(c), some algebra, whatever, and take it as a tax-free donation and then turn around and not reveal their investors into that and then use it for a public or a political campaign message. Explain that. How does that work? I mean, that they could do that.
it's where we're at. It's where we're at, Ian, and as I say, it's going to get worse before it gets better, and everybody is going to have to be patient with it. And when I say that, I don't mean accepting of it. I say everyone is going to have to look at this thing as the unfortunate situation that we in this country face, and we're going to have to be, in a way, compassionately unemotional about it. And we're going to have to begin to say, you know what? People are going to have to vote their conscience in this country, and they're going to have to come to a place of authenticity, of belief and understanding. So they're going to have to become impervious to the effects of money and its attempts to influence our opinions and our decisions. Everyone's going to have to do that on a personal and individual basis. That's the way that you fight against it. You say, my vote and my opinion is beyond your money.
Right.
And when everyone does that, the money will leave. The money will no longer have an effect.
Right.
You got it?
Well, I'm praying that happens tomorrow.
I hope so too. It won't happen tomorrow, but we all have to start with ourselves. And you know, I feel that one of the great things about KPFT is it's a place I feel that we can go to where you know, really money is not the pervasive thing about KPFT. we have to deal with it. I've been talking about it all day on today's show. But we approach it from a way where we do not let it infect us and pollute us. Great to have you. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you.
713-526-5738. Kendrin is next on line four. Kendrin, how are you? You there, Kendrin? Did we lose you? I'm sorry. Next, let's take Robin on line six. Robin, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hello. I'm thinking about what you said, and personally, it would be a good time for me to invest in some stocks, which for me would be socially responsible mutual fund type of thing.
Yep.
Does that sound right?
And they are. There are those, yes.
But what about the part where you said that the best thing for the country right now would be to invest in treasury bonds to rebuild infrastructure?
Hey, the best thing is for the country to invest.
Maybe I misunderstood what you're saying about the treasury bonds should be used.
I said the best thing would be for the country to issue treasury bonds, which means not to invest, but to borrow for those purposes.
Talk about that a little more?
Yes. Let me hang up. Is that okay if I hang up so we don't get the background sound, Robin? Okay. The country's infrastructure is in disrepair. It's not just me saying that. Many, many studies have come out and have been showing that the level of investment in infrastructure has been lagging. And infrastructure is critical to any economy. You know, we have to have operating infrastructure because it is the platform upon which we transact our daily lives. The roads that we use, the way we get from place to place, the delivery of energy into our homes, all of it. And a country that is deferring investment in infrastructure is doing the same thing. If you owned a factory, let's not even say a factory, an automobile. You own an automobile and things break on the automobile, right? First Doyle knows about this problem, right? First, the air conditioner goes, and then the power windows go, and then you don't get the battery fixed, and then you don't get the body work done. And when you defer all that maintenance over and over and over again, what ultimately happens to the car? It becomes unusable. And a national infrastructure is the same thing. If you don't fix it and upgrade it and repair it and improve it, it's going to literally stop working. And then it's really going to cost you a lot of money, right? Then you're going to need a new car, all new car, versus having done these maintenance items along the way that, yes, cost money, but kept the thing running. And when I say we have a 1.5% treasury yield, echoing Joe Stiglitz and Paul Krugman and so forth, it means that the market is saying we are comfortable with the wherewithal of the people of the United States of America and its government to borrow additional money, and to do infrastructure investments with it. Okay? So I'm not saying that you specifically should be investing in treasury bonds or stocks. You know, Robin, that is your decision. And frankly, you need to sit down, and if you don't know how to do it yourself, you need to do it with a professional and understand what your position is. My goal earlier today was simply to talk about the relative pricing of yields in stocks versus bonds and to make sure everybody understands that we are not back in 1999. We're in a different environment right now. And bond yields are very low, fairly attractive, I would call them. Now, the country can borrow the money. I don't want the government to go out and start building roads necessarily or building out energy infrastructure, because I do believe that businesses are in a better place to do those things. But the government can serve as a borrowing entity that borrows and then turns to subcontractors that are in the business world, road building companies and energy companies and so forth, and then uses that money that's come in through the government can purchase those improvements. And boy, that would really, really, really help our economy. But, you know, we've got a bunch of people who are totally opposing that on the grounds of debt levels that we're at. And those are important. But we need to get to those later. Right now, we have an opportunity to make investments at a very high rate of return. And how do you make money in investments? If you can borrow at 1.5% and you can make 10% on an investment, have you done pretty well? Yeah, I'd say so. Now, do you think that when the government borrows money at 1.5% and then turns and puts it into infrastructure, roads, energy delivery systems, transmission power lines, all this kind of stuff, national parks, conservation projects, water reclamation, whatever, you name it. Doesn't it sound to you like those projects yield a little bit more than the 1.5% borrowing cost? You know, I don't know what the return is exactly, but I figure it's somewhere between, you know, 5% and 20% or something annual. And the cost of the government to borrow that money for the financing is 1.5%. So to me, it's a no-brainer. To Paul Krugman, it's a no-brainer. To Joe Stiglitz, it's a no-brainer. But, you know, to a lot of people, specifically Republicans, it's you know, we're selling our souls. Just a few minutes left. Let's take Tom on line one. Tom, welcome to the New Capital Show. Tom, you there?
Selling our souls. Just a few minutes left.
Oh, Tom's got some kind of delay thing going on. Let's go to Kedron is back. Kedron.
Yes.
Welcome.
Tom's got some kind of...
Yes, I wanted to make
turn your radio down.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment on the immigration issue and just the government as a whole.
Okay. I'm not on that issue, but maybe you'll tie it into what I've been saying. Go ahead.
Okay. Basically, the immigration issue is leading to job losses here, which we all know. That's a no-brainer. Also, that's leading to terrorism, the incline of terrorism also, because we don't know who's coming across the border. It's not just illegal Mexicans. It's more than that. I have connections in the military, and I do know what's going on, and it's creating havoc out here. It's actually creating a rebel society within America, and that's very dangerous. We do not want that.
Kedron?
Go ahead.
I want all people everywhere to have work that is dignified and worthy of them. All peoples in all countries, American, Mexican, Chinese, European, I want all people everywhere to have dignified work. And I want you to have it too. And I hope you do. And if you don't, then I hope you'll find it. Okay?
Right. I totally agree with that.
It's great to have you. Thank you for your call. Let's go to Alon, right?
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Alon, how are you?
Yes. Quickly, before I get to my question, in furtherance of Ian's interests and the problems with the campaign financing and so forth, I have been recommending people take a look at the constitutional amendments proposed by Harry Braun at braun2012.us.
Yeah, I know. B-R-A-U-N. I know he's your guy.
Besides that, though, I'm in a position, I'm on Social Security, 65 years old. I, because of past circumstances, have no assets anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So starting from square one,
mm-hmm.
I'd be willing for short-term investments to try to build up a capital, you know, increase, whatever. There's a couple newsletters that I like out of many that I get solicited for.
Okay, well, look.
One is Agora Financial Executive.
Okay, hang on a lot. I've only got a few minutes, so I can't go through the newsletters. And frankly, I don't want to.
No, I just wanted to throw this.
Yeah, I don't want to take the time
to. If you're familiar with it.
Yeah, I'm not, but I there are lots of newsletters. I don't want to take the time to go through them. But what I want to say to you is that you are in a particular position. Your capital is gone. You're going to have to rebuild it. How old are you?
65.
So, I mean, you're 65. You're in a tough place, and you're going to have to be very careful, more careful than other people might have to be in the investment decisions that you make.
Yeah, I'm willing to gamble up to maybe $100 every other month.
You know, something like that. You are in a different position, and I love that you called, and I love that you brought this out. And I've only got a few seconds left, because what you are indicating is that no two people are alike. Everybody is different. Everybody has to take account of their own different position and decide what is the amount of risk that they are able to take. And you are not able to take lots and lots of risk like somebody else.
Right.
So I want, and you're doing a wonderful job of bringing this out and letting me bring this out to everybody, which is you, every listener listening right now, you are your own unique self. The circumstances and factors that you face in your life financially are not like anyone else's, and you need to treat yourself as unique. So when anybody comes on the media or the radio, me included, and says, you need to go do this, and they're talking to everybody, just stop and say, I need to think personally about what's right for me. Okay, Alon, great to have you. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
That does it for another edition of the New Capital Show. I am Leo Gold. Thanks to Doyle. Stay tuned, please, for the KPFT local news coming up next after that Al Jazeera and then the rebroadcast of Democracy Now! This is the place to be on the radio in the afternoon for news. Until next week, take care.
KPFT is supported in part by the Folklife Traditional Arts Program of the Houston Arts Alliance, now exhibiting Weaving Home in its gallery at 3201 Allen Parkway, an exhibition that explores the textile traditions of Houston's Karini community. Weaving Home tells the story of an art form at the center of refugee life. For information on hours, scheduling a tour, or special events associated with the exhibition, call 713-581-6123 or visit on the web at HoustonArtsAlliance.com.
Want to help KPFT but can't make the drive out to the little house on Lovett Boulevard? A great way to aid KPFT is as simple as logging into Facebook and Twitter. Connect with KPFT via social media. It's simple. Just visit twitter.com/KPFT and facebook.com/KPFT Houston. Then share our links and donate form with your social circles on Twitter and Facebook. Chances are you know people who may not know KPFT, and you'll introduce them to the fantastic music, interviews, news, and more that you hear daily on this radio station. Remember, just visit twitter.com/KPFT or facebook.com/KPFT Houston to promote and support KPFT online. This is Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Voice of Pacifica Radio.
Ana Sot, Radio Pacifica, al KPFT 90.1 FM, for Houston.
Unasikiza 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Yawad hai Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hai Pacifica Toy, kissing scene.
Chaliye, aaj hum sab mil karke is dharti pe shanti ke liye.
Jung tumun nai lin shi tha, jo ye ling dao.